what all of these parameters do. So that it's just meant to be a way of looking at what's there. Reference counting. The original purpose of the K-object structure, because it's the only way you can really know that some particular device has become unused. You know, I can rip my network card out of the computer, and the networking driver says, okay, this thing's gone. I'll just wipe out all this network device stuff. Meanwhile, the networking subsystem says, hey, I was still using that. And the whole thing kind of falls apart. You've got to keep those structures around until all of the users of them have gone away. Yeah, indeed. Some people, I think, wish they were his last words. Anyway, K-objects have turned into something fairly fancy. The whole SysFS representation of an object is now handled by the K-object. The K-object has become the glue that holds the whole device model hierarchy together. And this is kind of the structure called a K-ref, which I'll look at if we have time at the end. But for all practical purposes, it looks like K-objects still do reference counting, and that's how it's often done in a lot of things. They are, as I said, complicated data structures. They have a lot of pieces, and we'll get into what all those pieces are in a moment. I want to talk initially about how K-objects are used. You think you've got this tracking itself. So you'll never find a K-object by itself. You'll always find it embedded in something else. And this leads to all kinds of strange pointer work at times that can be very confusing when you're looking at the source. But if it's done right, it's not too bad. So one example I just put up here is struct cdev. This is the structure that represents a char device in the kernel. This is actually about K-objects, so the first thing in the structure. I'm sure the compiler would never dream of reordering it on me, and nobody would ever think of putting something ahead of it in the structure in the future. So I can just cast my pointer, and that's a really bad idea. There's a nice little macro that has been built, which is this here, container of macro. You pass it a pointer. I just did a quick grep and threw up some examples. These are from last night's. Everything from the structure that handles CPU frequency governor policy, struct device, which is sort of the core of the device model itself, the original use of it, various other types of device structures, request queues, and so on. Again, a quick grep will turn up a bunch of these. There's more than that. The point is that if you look in these structures, you'll often name a K-object can fail. Because it can, if your name is really long, try to allocate memory, so you've got to check that. There's a few places in the kernel that don't. That becomes the name under which this K-object will appear in SysFS, if it appears in SysFS. It doesn't have to. Then once you've got it, you can think about it. So there's two fairly simple functions for obtaining references and getting rid of them. Call K-object get. If it returns back the K-object you passed to it, then it succeeded. If it returns back null, then it didn't. In fact, the only time it will fail currently is if you pass it a null pointer to begin with. But the interface clearly anticipates that it could fail. There's not usual use after free sort of bug that happens. Now, reference counting has to be done carefully. This is something that people tend to screw up a lot because it's hard. If you take a reference to a K-object, you will ensure that K-object will continue to exist for as long as you hold that reference. So you must increment the reference counts of both the K-object and the module that works with it. Because if the module goes away, then somebody tries to do something, terrible things will happen. So it goes, it tries to get the reference to the module first. If that fails because it's being unloaded, then it just gives up. Otherwise, it tries to get the reference to the K-object. If that fails... Yeah, in the kernel, get and put are pretty common usage for obtaining references to things and releasing them. You'll see that all over the place in there. That's just the usage that they have adopted. It tends to look a little weird, then you get used to it and you don't notice it anymore. To maintain a reference count on an object, you have to do the right thing when that reference count goes to zero. Right, if you maintain your reference count and then you just think, okay, I'm pretty sure no one will be using this now, and you release it, say, when a file gets closed or whatever, you're going to screw things up. Or similarly, if you say, well, I don't know if it's ever going to be safe, then you leak memory. There may be situations, obviously, where more is called for. but that's the core of it. Any K object that is created that does not have a release function is broken. And anymore, there are places in the kernel where they will trap that and it will throw warnings at you, because there were a lot of cases early on when K objects went into the kernel that people were kind of typically the way this is referred to. So it can be pointed to directly from the K objects, and you point to the structure which contains your release function, or via another path, which is more common, which I'll get to in a couple of slides. With this K-type structure, you can think of it as, in a sense, the identification of your derived type. If you've got the K object as your sort of base collection, maybe more than one, the character device system can either allocate these CDEV structures dynamically itself, or it can take one that you've allocated somewhere else. So it has two different release functions depending on which variety of structure it's using, one of which actually calls K-free on the structure and one of which does not. So you create your K-object type structure and you store a pointer to it in the K-object itself, SysFS hierarchy glue. And there's an interesting thing about K-sets, whereas you can have a K-object that's not actually represented to user space in SysFS. That is not true of K-sets. Every K-set actually appears as a directory in SysFS once you use it. I'm not sure why they did it that way, but they did. Here's the structure again. I've grayed out a couple things I'll get back to later in the same way. But it's a K object with some added container functionality added to it. It's all sort of pseudo object oriented stuff by people who just didn't really want to do object oriented stuff. So if you define a K type in the K set as opposed to in the K object itself, the K set version, this version here, will over called K set. It is a pointer to the K-set which contains that K-object, if there is one. Okay, there's a separate pointer, which is a K-object pointer, which points to the parent K-object. Now, these two are often essentially the same thing, but they have different meanings. The K-set pointer locates the container. What container holds this particular K-object? If you want to have an object appear in multiple places, you have to do it in other ways. The parent pointer does rather fewer things. The main thing that it does is it locates the K object in SysFS. Right? When a K object appears as a directory in the SysFS file tree, the directory which contains it is the one KSet. So you got these two pointers pointing to different places in the same structure. But that's how the hierarchy usually works. It doesn't have to. I don't know of any exceptions to it in the kernel currently. And there's some objects that don't have K-sets, but I don't know of anybody who's set the K-set over here and the parent over there, but you could do it, I believe, K-set. If you simply wanted to enumerate all the objects that are in this K-set, for example, if you've got a K-set representing all the block devices on the system, you wanted to find them all, you would follow the links in that yellow list. Yes? Well, I haven't actually listed the K-type on here at all. You follow that red arrow. The sort of greenish arrow there is the parent pointer. Right? If you want to follow things up and find out how things sit in the SysFS hierarchy, you would follow the parent pointer. And a few other things are done that way as well with the reference counting. I'll show you how that works momentarily. Actually, as of 2.6.12, that is not strictly true. I'll give a USB key to whoever can tell me what the difference is. All right, well, I'll have to tell you a little later on. There is actually a slight difference once 2.6.12 comes out. Okay, so there are some side effects of doing this addition. That containment causes both of them to stay around. You have to take it out of the K-set first. And it can generate hot plug events. That, in fact, is the difference between K-object add and K-object register. K-object add no longer does that. That's a change they just made. Nice, subtle change that doesn't break any compilation, so it'll break something nicely somewhere. The device model hierarchy puzzle. A subsystem can be thought of as the top level of the hierarchy. It's really just a fancy K-set. It's a K-set with an added semaphore that's used for various things. I actually think this structure is going to go away because there's work afoot trying to get rid of the use of that semaphore. Sort of the justification for the subsystems protect this list operations. That's all going away. In 2.6.12, I believe that restriction will no longer be there. But that's how it works for now. So, if you just look at what we've seen so far, we've looked at four types of objects, four data structures, all of which make one big, sort of complicated data structure. So we've got the K objects, which are put together in the block subsystem. Now, if you look in the kernel source, there is a subsystem called block subsys. It's got a type associated with it, a K-type block. This is where all the block devices in the system, all the actual physical block devices, are stored. So there's a K-set there. It can have a whole set of partitions in it. And so there's a separate Genda structure which is used for that. They could have used a K-set to hold the partitions if they wanted to, but partitions are an ordered list, in a sense, which K-sets are not. It's stored as a simple array, so they didn't do that. So they have a whole bunch of K objects, one representing each partition, an I.O. scheduler attached to it, and that can actually be detached and plugged back in different ways. So each one of these things is represented by a K object with a different type. And you get this whole structure, which looks like this. You can look in SysFS and you can see it. I'll show how it translates to SysFS after I'm done talking about SysFS. But this is kind of a very simplified version of a... All attributes, the actual files, as you were, within SysFS, are attached to the K objects. So you've got a directory full of attributes. All of those kind of belong to one K object that's there. Reference counting is an important part of this here. As some people found to their detriment early on, if you were, for example, to... stuff can go away, even though the hardware is gone, even though the device driver thinks it's done with it, and so on. It cannot go away because there is this reference from user space, which is completely asynchronous and completely out of the kernel's control. So the reference counting is a really important aspect of this, and it's one of the things that people had some trouble getting right. That's why some pieces of SysFS, which is not particularly interesting, but it'll be there. Typically, you want to not have it be empty, so you want to add some attributes to it. This is done by way of these attribute structures. It's a pretty simple structure. It's got the name of the attribute. That is the file name that will show up in the SysFS directory. We'll implement all of your attributes. So you've got the show and store functions. These functions will be called in response to requests from user space. They'll be passed in the K object, which is associated with this particular attribute, the attribute structure itself, and a buffer to operate on, and perhaps the size of incoming data. So this show function needs to see what's there, make sure it makes sense, and act on it as it makes sense. Then what you do is you define the default attributes, and this is where we get back to our K object type structure here. I had previously grayed out a couple of these fields. Now you can see them all. That SysFS op structure with those two operations belongs here, and the... Okay, you can create attributes that are specific to a particular object and aren't attached to all of them. It's done with this function SysFS create file. You pass it the K object and the attribute structure, and it'll add it in there. The thing to note, though, is that it will still use the same show and store functions. That function takes two K objects. The only kind of symbolic links you can create within SysFS are links between K objects. So you have a source and a destination, and it simply makes a link that points from one to the other. If you think back to the beginning when I showed that big directory listing, there were a couple of links going across. They were implemented using SysFS create link in this. This is how it looks in SysFS. So you got your block subsystem, it's sysblock. Each device shows up as a directory underneath it. Each partition shows up as a directory underneath that particular its particular device, and so on, all the way down into the I.O. schedulers and such. And then we saw some of the attributes again in the example towards the beginning there. It all kind of ties together, and these events are generated whenever K-object hot plug is called. K-object register will call that for you. K-object add no longer will. It results in a call typically in user space to sbin hot plug, which gets a parameter and a big environment describing what's going on. Then the hot plug scripts are supposed to, what you have to do, yeah.
Are there multiple
Sorry, what was
are
that?
There multiple
Are there multiple event notification mechanisms? There are now, actually. There's the hot plug mechanism. There is also what's called the user events mechanism that was added recently. To can define three methods which describe how hot plug operations are generated. So whenever a K object is added or removed and the system thinks it might want to create a hot plug event, first thing it does is it calls the filter function, the first one there. And the filter function can simply say, okay, yes, we want to generate a hot plug event for this, or no, actually this is a parameter to SBIN hot plug. Then there's the actual hot plug function, which doesn't actually generate a hot plug event or anything like that. What it actually is creating the environment, which is passed to the hot plug function. So it just gets an array, a buffer, and a set of pointers, and whatever information that this particular subsystem wishes to provide to user space. This reference counting, which is really done by KREFs, although it looks like it belongs to the K object. You got your K types for release functions and SysFS stuff. You got your hierarchy glue stuff that we talked about. All this stuff gets pieced together. The SysFS side of it, one directory for every K object, and all these various operations and attributes which belong into this K type structure. Model code in the kernel, you tend to see a lot of boilerplate. You really do. You do in various subsystems see people creating macros, so there are typically macros for defining attributes. So instead of filling this whole structure, you have one line, you know, block attribute or whatever. You see some of that stuff done, but that tends to be specific to the subsystems that are using it. To a great extent, it looks like this. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you see over and over again. Whoever is actually calling kObject at. Okay, typically, by the way, you don't typically see this done in drivers. You usually see a lot, most of this work is done at the bus level. You see a lot of it at the PCI bus level or the USB bus level. Drivers typically don't have to do a huge amount of this. Sometimes you see it there. But that's where you see it. And again, that's a change. It was just merged into the 2.6.12 RC kernel that the hot plug got moved out of kObject add that way. Out of memory, eventually, you'd have to work at it for a while. You run into open file limits, so you'd have to create a lot of processes to do it. There's probably easier ways to DOS the kernel, I would guess. But yeah, you can maybe do that. Up there?
Has anybody looked at using, say, maybe an option to allow SysFS to ripple rather than probing everything yourself?
So you're asking.
And using effectively hot plug.
You're asking if you could configure your kernel or
yeah,
such
I
by.
I was wondering if basically something sort of like thought putting a hook into, say,
it's a bit late.
Do that for sort of like the distribution to be able to detect and start.
Yeah, I mean, user space does detect devices by way of that. At that point, that's part of what it's for. Yeah?
I think this question's a lot smaller than that one. Are there any IO control plan or implemented for files in SysFS?
Out of a K object.
Yeah.
From user space. And that's not there now. I mean, that wouldn't be a hard thing to code up, I suppose. You know, it'd be the sort of thing that you would change in the observing of it. But you could do it. I don't know if there's ever been that much interest in that. The other question was finding out who is referencing things, or FESS 4, is to do that. So if you go, you know, the degree to which it is implemented varies a lot. If you go into some of the networking areas, there's vast amounts of information there that have been exported from the net device. You go into other areas and there's less of it. You know, if you go into the sys module, you can get the module reference count by way of SysFS and a few other things. That's the mechanism that's there. But I wouldn't be able to tell you where it is. Okay, back there.
Thanks. Is there some sort of naming convention for all of these attributes and class names? Is it like written somewhere where it says, I've got to create something here, do it this way?
No, there's no standard for naming of attributes. No, that was the question.
So I imagine there's trouble, you know, user space slash apps sort of positive?
Yes, without a naming convention, turn into slash proc. I believe the answer is no, it'll turn into a different kind of mess. Now, a lot of the trouble with slash proc is not the naming of the files, it's what's in them. There's all kinds of file formats, and they tend to change at times and so on. Slash sys does string parsing functions for things you write in there. There's not a whole lot of writable attributes so far. I mean, the functions exist. Whether people use them, we will see. Increasingly, a lot of the static checking that's done on the kernel will catch some of the...
Just wondering, when you talk about dangling links before, how do they show up in the file system? The target name is based on a memory pointer. What does that look like?
Yeah, how that's actually represented here. You back here, there. You see these pointers, these symbolic links are all done as relative links. So you can mount SysFS wherever and it works.
The dangling, what does the dangling link name look like?
It looks like any other name. Okay, so right back here. Nothing.
How does this tie in with the debugs?
You plug in a USB device, it will set it up. It will generate this hot plug event, which results in an invocation of slash sbin slash hot plug. Why does creating a symlink not increment the reference count? That would avoid that particular problem. I guess it just wasn't seen as a problem. Sorry, a little left.
The release function is a loadable module. Can you stop the module getting unloaded before the release function is deployed?
Okay. If the release function is in a loadable module, how do you keep the module from being unloaded before the release function is to manage those reference counts outside of the module so that doesn't happen? Yeah?
Quick question. Your diagrams, what did you use to do your diagrams?
What did I use? Okay, since there is a store function for attributes, does user space have to write the value with a single write? Okay, current development model. Yeah, I believe it could have. It kind of came in incrementally. And I got to stop and get out of the way for the next speaker here. You can ask me questions afterwards.
There's your magic piece of paper.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, I did a little over. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I cut into your time here.
You could create us. Oh, no, no. I'm just going to try and get this file.
The reason for that is because currently, say you've got a block of devices in your file system, and you want to, and I know at least one of the drivers, even the distributor, has no name set for its proc engine, so it never creates it.
You probably be good to have
had a lot of help from Jeremy Kerr from Auslabs and the K42 group at Watson. So the first question, what the hell is K42? K42 is a scalable research OS project. It's open source in the kernel, and it also supports the Linux API and ABI at user level. So depending on who you ask, some people might claim that K42 is a replacement for the Linux kernel. However, it has very different internal structure, and threading and the scheduler all reside primarily at user level. It only runs on PowerPC64. That's mainly because the majority of people working on experimental operating system features like hot swapping and dynamic update, which I'll be talking about. And that's the K42 logo there. I like to think sometimes that K42 is the answer to something, where the something depends upon who's asking the question or who's within the kernel. This design primarily helps achieve scalability across an SMP system, but it also enhances customizability of the system because data used is encapsulated within those objects. So to access any data held by another object, that's a method call across to that object. And the objects are much finer grained than anything like the model.
Putting that.
Up the top is the process object, which is the particular region of the address space. And the region object in this case is policies like prefetching or caching. Things like that live inside the FCM object. All of those objects are clustered objects. Clustered object is a whole talk in itself, and it's the word. That allows you, and the other part of the puzzle is that the object translation table can transparently refer to different representatives or different versions implemented within an object, transparent to the clients of the object. So I won't be talking about that, but it's basically K42's, the way that K42 achieves much great scalability. This mechanism also an instance that's servicing an object reference. Plus, all of these objects have a virtual function table. Every virtual function table contains pointers to all the code for the methods of that object. So that is what allows you to, by swinging that object pointer, get a completely different implementation, including different implementation of all the object's methods. For example, it allows you to change the caching or prefetching policy for a particular file. Your algorithm for doing caching is not going to perform very well in that case. You run the file and hot swap that instance. And that hot swap operation is also the basis of our dynamic update implementation. So how does a hot swap work? Well,